and welcome to another episode of Leading from the Library, our Future Ready Schools podcast. And I couldn't be happier today. I took a little break from doom scrolling to invite my amazing friend, Jennifer Lagarde, onto our show. Hi, Jen.
Hey, Shannon. I'm so glad I could be a distraction for you from the never-ending stream of sad and upsetting information that we all consume every day.
I know. I couldn't be happier too. When I saw this on my calendar today, I was super excited, not just to catch up with you, but also to hear all of the amazing insight that you have around news and information literacy. And I couldn't think of a better person to come to than to you. So maybe first start by introducing yourself.
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Jennifer Lagarde, and I've known Shannon for too many years to count. We'd probably need a calculator to do that, which is unfathomable since we both still look so young and fresh. But in all those years, Shannon and I, our journeys have paralleled in so much as we've both been teacher librarians, and we've both worked at our district level to support the other teachers and administrators and students in our districts around library work. I worked for a lot of years as the state library support in the state of North Carolina, but now I live and work in Olympia, Washington, where I have the pleasure of helping to support pre-service librarians at both Rutgers and Antioch University and through a variety of district level relationships here. So I like to just, the short answer is I'm just a librarian, but I'm a librarian who works with other librarians.
Yeah, that's the best part, right?
Yes.
I love that too. And I was just telling Jennifer before we started that she's very lucky to live where she does too. And so maybe we'll hear a little bit about that too today. But let's just start by hearing what you've been working on. I know that people love following what you put out there, what you write, if it's for School Library Journal and other publications, and what you have to share on social media. And you always have so much wisdom, I think, around these topics. And it's something that we all need, not just for ourselves, but as we work with our students. And so I just want to hear what you have been up to.
Sure. Well, it's funny because I think I bet a lot of people listening to this have been in the same situation, but we all have plans for our life and then things happen, like, you know, global pandemics, et cetera, that change those plans, right? So I really thought I'd spend the last few years of my career focusing on being an advocate for readers and the work around reading joy, and really focusing also on how we help kids who live in poverty become readers. But while I still work and find those areas to be points of passion for me, most of my work really revolves now around news and information literacy, on helping learners of all ages, whether they be kindergarten or sixth grade or 60 years old, parse fact from fiction in all of the information that we consume. I think, you know, librarians have always been defenders of democracy and have always been conduits to the very best information. But in the world we live in now, where information has never been more plentiful, mm-hmm. and along with that, there's also never been more mis and disinformation, the role of the librarian in leading the way to facts and truth has never been more important. So that's really what my work has revolved around the last 4 or 5 years. And it's exciting, frustrating, but also very rewarding.
Yeah. And it's so needed, right? And I think about, like, now in the world that we live in, and, you know, even we're back at school with our kids face to face, and our mm-hmm. kids have lots of questions. They have lots of questions about what they hear and what they see. And there's a lot of sensitive topics out there. And I think that one thing that you have such great insight to is just some advice that you can give us. First of all, like, we're in this pandemic, you know, how do we shift through all this stuff And mm-hmm. how do we have these conversations with even our little ones, all the way up to, like you said, even with our teachers and our families? Like mm-hmm. we want to hear some great advice on how to, I think, like, face that head on, and how do we work with our kids?
Well, I think one of the things that's missing a lot of times from those conversations, but that I find that even little kids really get, is that we live in a world now where we all expect information to be free. If you think about it now, it doesn't matter how old the kiddos are that you teach, whether they're seniors in high school or they're just starting out. None of them have ever lived in a world where subscribing to a newspaper or a magazine or cable TV was normal. They've never lived in that world. They've only ever lived in a world in which we pay for information by clicking on it, where yeah. clicks are the currency exchange, right? And so we have to have that conversation with kids about how we do pay for information, but we pay in this way, by clicking. And in order to get us to click, then everybody who creates information, whether they're a trained journalist or they're a troll, or there's somebody who's trying to deceive us, or they're even a comedian writing for The Onion. Everyone who creates information now has the same hope, which is that their story or their video or their post will be the one that goes viral. Mm-hmm. So, because all those clicks equal money for them, right? So we have to remind our kids that one of the ways that they get us to click is by making sure that the information makes us feel a very strong emotion. I think social emotional learning and news and information literacy are really deeply connected, and yet we don't talk about that a lot. And I think that's really the first step in helping us have these conversations and say, yes, information sometimes makes us feel angry. Sometimes it makes us feel afraid. Sometimes it makes us feel a lot smarter than the people we're seeing on social media. All those emotions make us click and share and pass it on, right? So the first step is to think about, how does this make us feel? And if that emotion gives us the urge to share something or like it without checking it out further, that's a red flag to press pause and then put on our hat as a digital detective and figure out what's really going on here. So that first step, I think, is a really important component to having those conversations, because it puts us all in the same boat. There's no this side versus that side. We're all in this same boat, where the information is designed to trigger us. Let's be smarter than that.
Yeah. And I think that I saw that last week. We were having conversations. We always kick off the year, you know, talking about digital citizenship and just the things that we're going to focus on when we look at information and news. And even though we had these things planned and we had activities, most of the time spent with our kids was just having conversations, which I think is something we have to remember, you know, like having those tie-ins with the social emotional learning and using, you know, not only our voice to be able to talk and share and listen, but some of the great resources that are out there as well. And I know that I would love for you to share some of the work that you've done to support, like, where do we go to find the support and just help, and also things that other people have. Where do we go to find, you know, what we need? How do we educate ourselves as librarians and help our teachers understand that too? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, you know, we're in a moment right now in history where there's so much information that sometimes it's hard to filter it down to what's really great, right? And so like a lot of other examples with our PLN, sometimes hashtags are just really a great resource, yeah. because you can find where people are sharing some of the best resources that they found and ones that they've tested. You know, I share a lot on social media. I use the hashtag fact versus fiction when I share anything that's news and information literacy related. I know a lot of people use the hashtag DigSit, DigSCIT for digital citizenship. And also, I think you'll find when you look at those hashtags, you'll find some players out there who really devoted themselves to trying to write the information ship mm-hmm. by creating, sharing, testing, reviewing these kinds of resources. I don't know what I wouldn't get through the day without the News Literacy Project, or without Sam Weinberg from the Stanford History Group, who's devoted his life to this work. There's lots of people out there who are really, who are doing the work for teachers in terms of vetting it. And it's just a matter of following them and keeping your eye on those hashtags, and you'll see where the resources are being shared. But I also think teachers and librarians in particular, Shannon, I think are really in a great place to lead this work. I mean, I say to librarians all the time, of course you are the superhero that's going to save the day and all this. Of course it's going to be librarians, because it's not only true that libraries have always been the information hubs of our schools, but librarians also understand the connective power of story and how story helps us empathize with other people and see the world through a different lens and different perspective, which is a really important part of not allowing news or information to trigger a bias or make us feel as though someone who's different from us is an adversary. So librarians can take what they know about stories, about collection development, about the latest and best in literature for young people, and then connect that with news and information literacy, and I think a really powerful way, and in a way that no one else in a school building has either the resources or the training to do.
Yeah, that is great advice and great insight too. And I think, you know, since we're talking about future ready librarians in this podcast series, I think that's a huge part too of how we can really step forward and be leaders within this, because it is something that we are qualified and we're experts and we have these resources that we need to bring. And it's a great way to be leaders within that too. I mean, we talk right now, we're almost to the election, and that is a huge topic right now within schools. And how do we have these conversations with our kids? And where do we go, you know, when we're talking about, you know, we're in a pandemic and we're talking about the election and we have all these other things. And so I would love to know, like even me personally, and I'm sure that others would too, any suggestions that you have when talking to kids about the election and what is coming up?
Well, I've come to feel very strongly that when people become entrenched or they dig their heels in about a certain belief or opinion, that it's because that belief or opinion is rooted in deeply held values. And of course, values are the things we define ourselves with, right? So I think one of the ways that we can have a more productive conversation with kids or even with adults is to change our language just a little bit around what we're asking them to do. We're not asking them necessarily to be, to determine whether or not this article, which is about something that they've heard their parents talk about, is real or not, but rather let's talk about what the work of the digital detective is and how do we figure out what's factual and what is emotion driven in every news source, I mean, in every piece of information from every single source. I think we get into trouble sometimes when we put some source into this is a good category and this is a bad one. Mm-hmm. Rather, if we help our kids take on this persona of the detective for every piece of information, whether it's a YouTube video or a book off the shelf or an article that they're reading on their phone or an Instagram post, if they understand that that's their job as this information transaction, then I think it becomes a more broadly applied strategy rather than something that is rooted in maybe things that conflict with what they're being taught at home. It's not our job to teach kids that the values they're being taught at home are wrong, but rather it's our job to provide them with skills to make sure that the values they adopt are rooted in truth and fact. And I think we all want that. No matter what we believe, we all want that to be the case.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I will definitely take that back too to my teachers and just what we're doing. I work in a school with preschoolers in 12th grade. And I think being able to honestly have those conversations is such a healthy thing. But again, thinking about how we're supporting our kids and those thoughts. I think that is so great. Now, I have to ask too, I know that you're always up to new and exciting things. And whenever you post one of your fabulous infographics, we all love those.
Oh, thank you.
They're so great. And I think that those are so awesome right now to even share, you know, with families and to share with our kids who are learning virtually. And I have to ask, you know, just not only like what's going to be next for you, or what are you working on within this scope, but also like, what advice do you have for us as that next, as we're maybe working in a hybrid situation, or maybe we're face to face or remote, and we would just love your insight on that too.
Sure. Well, first of all, those infographics are a labor of love for me. Darren Hudgens and I, Darren is my brother from another mother, who co-wrote Fact Versus Fiction with me. We're working on a second book around this idea of digital detective work. And Shannon, I'm really, really excited because the book is really 90% lesson plans. And they all revolve around this detective theme, where kids will be given a case file full of information and resources, and then they have to apply these detective steps to parse what's real and what isn't. And as someone who's like the biggest fan of the Forensic Files ever, this is such a nerdy thing for me to go all detective geek out. So I just love it. But those infographics are things that we've created for the book. So I've shared a handful of them online, but we have something like 40 of them made for the book around all of these different topics. So whether it's a digital case file that you shoot out to kids via Google Classroom or some other LMS, or you print them out and put them in an actual file folder and hand it to them, they get this case file where they get to do this work. And so the infographics are part of that, because we have found that in our research, a lot of the skills that our kids need to be able to determine what's real or not, the resources out there for them are often written for adults. And so we wanted to create resources that would be kid accessible, whether they're in elementary school or high school, et cetera. So the infographics and also some videos and lots of other things are going to be part of that. And I'm just really, really excited for the book to come out, which will be next year. But all of that to say, as far as what's next goes, I sound a little bit like a broken record, but I truly believe in my heart that the thing for us to focus on now, especially in the lead up to the election, is this connection between information literacy and social emotional learning, partly because I do think it makes us better fact checkers, but also because as we get closer to the election and we're spending longer and longer trapped indoors in a situation that we don't want to be in and that we all have real strong opinions about, that I think we're going to need self-care and be able to recognize when our emotions are driving us in an unhealthy way. So the ability to be able to do social emotional learning in that context with kids, as opposed to like, let's just all sit down and have a mindful moment, which has its place, but applying it to this really relevant, practical work, I think is important. I think that's really the thing I would encourage everyone to be thinking about.
Well, now we need your book to come out like pronto.
I'm working on it.
I can't even wait. And I love the whole digital detective. I mean, that's good for even people that are older. And so I think that that is going to be so much fun to do as well. And I can't wait to give my kids their little files and know that we can do it online too, which yes. is awesome.
I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but we've created a whole digital repository that we are calling the Evidence Locker, which is where all the case files will live, all of the resources, all the videos, et cetera. So when you get the book, there's only going to be one website link to it, and it'll be to the Evidence Locker. So that way they'll never be an out of date link. We can constantly update them and add new resources, et cetera. We are so excited about it, and it can't happen soon enough for us either.
Congrats on that. So when does it come out?
Thank you. It's supposed to be spring 2021. So keep all your fingers and your toes crossed. As soon as I have a pre-order link, believe me, I'll be sharing it.
Please share it with us. That is awesome. I love it. And I have to mention too the great work that you do around literacy. And I know that you're working on some special new projects. And if you don't follow Jennifer on Twitter and Instagram and all the great books that you read and the lists that you have, like, I just appreciate those so much.
Thank you. I tell everyone that's my joy scrolling. You know, all of this information, new stuff is the doom scrolling, but the books and literacy is my joy scrolling. I need to have a balance. Otherwise I would lose my mind. So thank you.
I love it. It's so awesome. So as we wrap up, I want you to, I love being inspired by you. I've heard you speak a lot and you're my friend. And I would love for you just to share some advice with our librarians right now, as we're in all kinds of different situations.
Sure. You know, my friend Deb Cockle and Keith Curry Lance just received a huge multi-year LSTA grant to find out from the states themselves what the real status is of teacher librarian positions around the country. So we can know in real hard numbers what kinds of positions, how many positions have been lost around the country. And that seems like really bad news, and it is. And I'm going to tell you right now to prepare, you know, buckle your seatbelt. Given the pandemic and everything else, I think when those numbers start to come out, we're going to be shocked by them. But in terms of advice then for the teacher librarians who are out there still doing amazing work for kids, it's hard, but I want you to look at what's happening now as an opportunity. The problems that we see in the world right now are fixable. And frankly, there's no one out there who's more prepared to do it than you. Your kids, your communities need you. And so you not only have an opportunity to really affect change in your community, but you also have an opportunity to really show what a teacher librarian can do. And we need you more than ever. So take care of yourselves, connect with other people, and get ready to work really, really hard, but really to work on really, really worthy things.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So thank you so much, my friend, for joining
us.
Thank you. And all the things that you had to share. And congrats on your book coming out. And we can't wait. And all the great things. We just appreciate you so much.
Thank you, my friend. Enjoy your time there in Denver and Iowa, and I will talk to you soon.
Yes, and thank you. A huge thanks to Follett for supporting all of the work that we do in this podcast, and I can't wait to see what we do next. So I'll talk to you soon. Thank you for joining us for the Future Ready Librarian podcast, Leading from the Library. I would like to also thank our sponsor, Follett Learning, for their amazing continued support.